We're turned to the first case this morning, which is Turcios v. Secretary of DHS, case number 18-9549. Counsel, we're ready to hear you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stacey Tolchin and Megan Brewer for Petitioner Turcios. There is no dispute that Mr. Turcios was a lawful permanent resident in 1997 at the time the former Immigration and Naturalization Service issued administrative removal. INS lacked the power in 1997 to issue that order because Congress did not confer authority to issue administrative removal orders under 1228B to lawful permanent residents. This is true even when Mr. Turcios misrepresented his identity. Because INS did not have the power to issue the order, the removal order is void for lack of jurisdiction. It must be reopened and rescinded. The court's recent November 4th decision in Lopez-Munoz, which was 28J'd to the court, establishes that a statute is jurisdictional if it confers an agency with the power to adjudicate cases. Lopez-Munoz states that only Congress can confer an agency's jurisdictional authority. Congress does not have to use the term jurisdiction in order to establish that it is conferring the power to adjudicate a case. The requirement that an individual be a non-lawful permanent resident in order to, for the immigration officers to enter administrative removal is jurisdictional. If you look at the statute at 12...
Before we go to the statute, do you have any case law supporting what you're saying here in interpreting that statute, saying that non-LPR is a jurisdictional prerequisite to 1228B.
No, Your Honor, it's only the statute. There's no case law on this. We've never seen a case like this in the courts.
You find that odd?
Not really, because normally they don't issue these orders against permanent residents. This was sort of a unique case, I think. And it's also, just to note, it was in 1997, which was right when the law changed in 1997. But usually, with administrative removal, they do background checks, they do the fingerprinting, they catch the issue and put the person into regular removal proceedings as opposed to administrative removal.
So we've had over 20 years of experience with this version of 1228B, and we have no cases that support the position you're arguing. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's the statute is clear, though, Your Honor, and the government does agree that he was a permanent resident. And I think the government would agree that the statute doesn't allow that. The issue is procedurally where we are now, as far as reopening 20 years later, right?
But the question is it jurisdictional?
Correct. Yes. And, this case just came out this month, right, Lopez-Munoz versus Barr, but the jurisdictional issues are developing right now after the Supreme Court's decision in Pereira, which is a whole different issue. But Lopez-Munoz does provide a guideline for when a statute is jurisdictional. In that case, the court found that the statute at issue was not jurisdictional, but it does provide a roadmap because it essentially says, does Congress provide the power to adjudicate cases? And if you look at the statute now at 1228B, 1228B1 says that the Attorney General may, in the case of an alien described in Section 2, determine deportability and issue a removal order. And then Section 2 says an alien is described in this paragraph if the alien, and then says, is not a permanent resident. So that's why I believe that the statute actually is jurisdictional. And if you compare this statute to the plenary removal statute, so the regular removal statute for immigration judges, and that's at 1229A, you'll see they're similar. So 1229A provides an immigration judge with authority to conduct proceedings for deciding the inadmissibility or deportability of an alien.
Why don't you compare it to 1252A2C, which is most pertinent in this case, and it says basically it bars review. Isn't that the way you state a constitutional statutory matter rather than saying nothing?
So A2C, I agree, would apply because he is an alien, right? So,
and you agree that's jurisdiction?
Oh, yes, absolutely. A2C is for this court.
That's clear on the face of the statute, it's jurisdictional. So what I want you to do is compare the language of that statute with the statute that you're relying upon, 1228B, for saying that that correspondingly is jurisdictional. It seems to me they are so different.
Well, it's a little different, too, Your Honor, because the HUC, of course, is this court's jurisdiction, right? And this is 1252B1 and B2 are agency jurisdiction, and so that's why I was analogizing to the general removal statute, which is the immigration judge's jurisdiction. The reason I think it matters is that we know that an immigration court is never going to have authority to issue an order of removal against a U.S. citizen, right? That's a jurisdictional prerequisite that the person be an alien, and the court's case in Gonzalez-Alarcón really outlines that. It establishes that if the person is a citizen, the immigration judge is lacking the jurisdictional fact necessary to issue an order of removal. The way that the statute is phrased in 1225B, which is the administrative removal, it's basically the same as the removal proceeding before the judge. It's just that it takes the term alien and exempts permanent residence.
When Congress is contemplating I'll call it a morass of various immigration laws, do you think that they distinguish in articulation of jurisdiction or non-jurisdiction between administrative statutes and statutes that affect the jurisdiction of the court?
I think so.
Tell me why.
Well, I think with, especially in this context, Your Honor, I mean, this is an important context. This is not, I'm not arguing that the issue of whether he's deportable for an aggravated felony is jurisdictional. The issue of an alien is jurisdictional, and specifically a non-lawful permanent resident is required, because here, Congress said, we know that normally a person who's an alien gets a hearing before an immigration judge. Full due process hearing, right to cross-examine, evidence, etc. But we're going to take that away for somebody who's not a permanent resident if they're deportable for an aggravated felony. That's a big step. And so I think Congress was very, very clear that this could only be done in the case of a non-permanent resident, because permanent residents are entitled to a full due process hearing. And that was really intentional. Nothing in the Act allows a permanent resident to be deported without a full due process hearing.
If Congress was so focused, as you suggest, don't you think that they would articulate it in a more clear fashion, somewhat like they do in 1252A2C?
Well, I actually...
Bars review or bars consideration of LPRs.
I think it is pretty clear, Your Honor, that the Attorney General may, comma, in the case of an alien described in paragraph 2, comma, determine deportability and issue removal. I think that is very clear that it has jurisdictional. It doesn't obviously say jurisdiction. It doesn't say, it wouldn't say exactly bars jurisdiction, but I do think it is clear. Sorry, Your Honor, did you?
No, I would say that allows consideration of the case. And it places it within the subject matter jurisdiction of the statute. But the word may means that the secretary discretion, in exercise of discretion, may choose not to do so.
That's absolutely true, because in this, it's clear the statute is written that we'll just do DHS, may not issue removal for a permanent resident. It may issue administrative removal for a non-permanent resident, but it doesn't have to, because of course the statute gives the agency the discretion to choose to initiate removal proceedings before an immigration judge.
Now, in this case, your client is, in a way, and don't take this disrespectfully, is a victim of his own fraud, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so are there any cases out there that address a case where a client is in your client's situation and then seeks to ask the secretary to exercise her seeming discretion to hear the case?
Your Honor,
Judge Murphy asked you a similar question. I want to be more specific and more direct about that.
I don't have a case where the person, let's face it, lied about their identity.
Right.
The general proposition, of course, is that subject matter jurisdiction can never be waived. And if you look at the Gonzalez...
Well, I don't know that it's subject matter jurisdiction. I mean, so let's presume for purposes of our discussion that the secretary does have subject matter jurisdiction. You and I have just agreed that the secretary doesn't have to hear the case. The discretion to hear is also the discretion not to hear or to grant, and also includes the correlative of the negative, that she may choose not to grant a hearing.
I think that the way the statute's written, Your Honor, there's only discretion if the person is not a permanent resident. They can hear the case or not hear the case. But if the person is a permanent resident, there is no discretion.
But it is a fact that is unknown by virtue of that citizen or LPR's, what is it, what?
LPR, yes.
Lawful permanent resident, LPR, right?
Yes.
The LPR's own deception, how is the secretary to know?
Well, that's why the regulations require that they verify that this is the person in the document, right? The regs actually say verify the identity of the person. And I see I'm running out of time, so I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
In other words, protect me from myself.
Yes. Yeah.
And didn't they do that in this case? They gave him every opportunity to protect him from himself.
Well, Your Honor, he was in jail for the criminal case when the case was done. It was under the name Juan Torres because that was the name that was provided on the criminal case.
By him?
By him. The only verification was his name and the criminal documents, so they never fingerprinted him. When he then later sought to renew the green card, that's when they printed and figured everything out. All it would have taken were prints.
And how do you get around Heckler versus Cheney?
Heckler versus Cheney, Your Honor, does not apply in cases where there's a challenge to the jurisdictional authority of the agency. That's cited in a brief. I believe there's the Third Circuit case on that. And of course, Your Honor, in the Mendiola decision, the court acknowledges that 1252A2D provides jurisdiction to this court for all legal and jurisdictional
But that
claims.
Is jurisdictional, correct?
This argument
Heckler,
is jurisdictional.
Yeah, Heckler v. Cheney, if Heckler v. Cheney applies, we don't have jurisdiction to hear your case.
Heckler only would apply.
I don't mean the agency, I mean us.
Right, but Heckler only applies if there's no legal standards to apply to a case. Right, so if it's a totally discretionary decision, we're saying that if immigration officers never had jurisdiction over the case, that's not discretionary, that's jurisdictional, and that's an exception to the Heckler versus Cheney doctrine. I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
Just a minute. It's Ms. Tolkien, did I pronounce
Tolkien,
it?
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to get back to where I was going
okay.
just a few minutes ago. So when they're processing the known Mr. Torres at that time in 1997, he signs everything, agrees to everything, doesn't say anything, and then they have an order of removal. And he has then the obligation, doesn't he, to exhaust administrative remedies if there's something wrong with that, doesn't he?
So not in the context...
Well, no, answer. Does he have the obligation to exhaust his remedies?
No.
Wow.
In administrative removal, the court in Aguilar in the footnote at the very end of the decision notes that 1252D1 exhaustion does not apply to an administrative removal order because this is not a remedy available as of right. This is just a form stating that it's a notice of the charges. And so this is a very unique exception to the exhaustion requirement. There's also a Ninth Circuit case called Castro-Cortez versus INS where they say that exhaustion isn't required of these administrative removal orders because there's not remedies available as of right.
All right.
Okay. I'd like to reserve my remaining time. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matthew Spurlock on behalf of the United States.
You guys are confused about where you're sitting.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's all right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
As long as there's room, right?
Before I start going into the issues of jurisdiction, whether this was the LPR status at the FARO stage was jurisdictional, I just would like to take a step back and give a little perspective. The petitioner was convicted of an aggravated felony without a doubt at the time he was put into the FARO proceedings back in 1997. Even if he were successful today, he wouldn't have been eligible for anything that he's not eligible for now in the reinstatement proceedings right now that are about to start in the Ninth Circuit, which is withholding only proceedings. He wouldn't have been eligible for asylum back then, and he wouldn't have been able, most likely, for withholding back then, and there was no cat. So the issue of whether or not, you know, really, when you look at it, there's not really too much that we're arguing about, but the fundamental issue that the court was getting into that I'll go ahead and talk about now also.
Well, before you go there, let's go to the last point that we were discussing with opposing counsel, and that is whether there's an obligation to exhaust in 1228B.
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's an obligation to.
Why is the position your opposing counsel has taken, why is that wrong?
Your Honor, I think with the opposing counsel, what their argument is that the procedures that are built into the statute and into regulation to ensure that the person subject to the FARO is getting an appropriate process is not enough for administrative protections. And that's simply not true, because as we know, you can still PFR a FARO if you do it within 30 days of the issuance of the FARO. He never did that. And he also never exhausted his administrative remedies. That's a whole other issue. There's several reasons.
He says he's not obligated to. Why is he obligated to?
He's obligated to because he does have procedural remedies available at that stage. It's built into the statute. And in fact, that's an excellent argument for why it's not jurisdictional. The LPR status is not jurisdictional. The statute doesn't say you're barred, that the LPR status, it's a bar to jurisdiction. That's not what it says. The statute provides the agency with the ability to place somebody into these expedited proceedings, and it gives them a framework on how to do that. And it gives them, hey, agency, this is the process that you need to go through to figure that out. And at the end of the day, what the agency has to do, they have to go through that process of notification, give the alien an opportunity to rebut the key facts that A, you are an aggravated felon, B, that you are not an LPR, and he never did that. He continued the farce that he wasn't who he was, that he was a different person, in order to beat the system and maintain his LPR status. And it worked for several years, it worked for many years, until he finally was caught, like 5-6 years later. But at the core of it, it's not jurisdictional, and
help me with this. Ms. Tolchin distinguishes how you articulate jurisdictional issues in a statute that governs court proceedings versus articulating a jurisdictional issue in statutes governing administrative procedure. She says they're different. Why is that not so?
It's not so because Congress could have very easily have made that distinction for jurisdiction for this case, and they didn't. As was mentioned earlier, they made it a discretionary, basically the Attorney General or their designee may institute these procedures if these certain criteria are in place. And Congress didn't do that. They gave this, basically handed the authority to the INS at that point to go ahead and make this consideration. And they had to go through those procedural, specific steps in order to ensure that this was done. That doesn't sound like something that, why would they have made that jurisdictional if they had given the opportunity for the INS to make a determination on clear and convincing evidence? If all INS had to do was make a factual determination and a legal determination that all those criteria were met. And I think it's pretty clear that to the extent that the petitioner suggests that they didn't do their due diligence, they were notified by the state that there was an individual by this name and had these fingerprint numbers, that this is who this individual was, and claimed to have entered illegally from Mexico. So the issue of whether or not they should have caught that, I think, is immaterial. INS went through and figured out and made a finding, clear and convincing evidence, that he met all the criteria. He had the opportunity to rebut that at several stages and said, I'm not this individual, I'm an LPR, I don't belong in FARO proceedings. And they could have immediately said, oh, yeah, actually you're not who you say you are.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do we have jurisdiction to consider this appeal?
We would argue no, Your Honor, for several reasons.
Why don't we address that first? Because if we don't have jurisdiction, that's a bit of a problem, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Why don't we have jurisdiction from your perspective?
Well, the first reason why, Your Honor, is exhaustion. He failed to exhaust remedies. He failed to exhaust his remedies before INS when he was in the FARO proceedings. And after that, he waived any sort of remedies at the FARO proceeding, and he also waived the opportunity to petition the court for review and say, I wasn't subject to FARO, I should have been given 240 proceedings, and he never did that. So there's a lack of exhaustion. And both of those in this case are not supported. Also, even if you assume that DHS's letter declining to reopen or to take a look at the 1997 FARO, assuming that's a final order of removal, which we suggest, we'd argue that it's not, that action constitutes an unreviewable action committed to the agency's inherent discretion, and this is what was mentioned earlier under Heckler, and we believe that applies in this case as well. And there is no meaningful standard in this case upon which this court can review DHS's decision to decline to revisit this 1997 FARO. The petitioner argues that
there are also parallel proceedings in Los Angeles, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
That's theoretical as to whether he might get judicial review of those proceedings, but presumably so.
Correct, Your Honor.
Some other court will determine that.
Correct, Your Honor. He would get review of the withholding-only proceedings, which is what's still pending, and that's... And also, apparently, petitioner is also intending to challenge the reinstatement order, at which point they're going to argue that the essentially the same thing they're arguing before this court, which is that the FARO was improper and based on the jurisdictional arguments.
I guess I just want to ask you though, do you concede or? I guess you presume that there's a final order here. Help me with that issue. The way your argument is phrased is we kind of concede or we want you, court, to presume there's a final order here. So help me understand that. How can we do that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the reason why it seems kind of confusing is because I think there's no jurisdiction on so many levels that we keep saying that even assuming that it's a final removal of order, that you still don't have jurisdiction, even if you did consider it to be a final removal order. We argue in our brief that it is not a final removal order. It's just simply an action taken upon the agency to write a letter to say, we've received your request to revisit these FARO proceedings, and we declined to do so.
So from your perspective, that's enough here?
Yes.
I mean, that's all. If we agree with you, the case is over.
There's no final removal of order. Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
The petitioner can still, as we just mentioned, has proceedings right now in Los Angeles for the withholding removal proceedings. And so ostensibly they're going to be able to go back and look at the FARO again if the petitioner is going to argue that there's a gross miscarriage of justice in the old FARO, which is what I think petitioner has stated that they are going to do. But in this case, we first argue, there's no final removal of order, final removal order with regard to the letter by DHS. And also, as I mentioned, the exhaustion issue, and also a criminal bar, as I mentioned. There's no argument whatsoever that he was not an aggravated felon. I believe that there was a period of time that it was possibly an argument, but that's been since waived by petitioner. So there's no doubt he's an aggravated felon, and so the criminal bar 1252A2C would apply as well. And that sort of goes back to whether or not his claim that the LPR issue is jurisdictional at the FARO stage. We argue that it's not. Very, very briefly, I want to also mention 1231A5 because I think that is also, although that's not goes to the court's jurisdiction, it certainly goes to the nature of the motion to reopen in this case. Because 1231A5 is absolutely clear. It completely bars reopening of any case after reinstatement has been issued. And that's what happened in this case, clearly. DHS reissued the case. Subsequent motions to reopen are barred under 1231A5, and it's clear. It's there's no doubt about that.
So that's the statute you're relying upon that directly addresses the letter from the immigration authority saying no, we will not reopen.
That's correct. It's assuming that you even would consider that to be a final removal order, that looks like a motion to reopen. That's what that is a motion to reopen. We would say that by denying reopening, the agency was acting in compliance with 1231A5, even though they didn't specifically say that in the actual document. It was just a letter saying we declined to reopen. But that is a clear bar to reopening in this case.
But there is a split in the circuits as to whether or not you cannot, as to whether or not there are pending proceedings, for example, in this case, the asylum proceedings.
We argue that there isn't a split.
But there's a split in authorities on that, right? The Fourth Circuit versus the Fifth, Seventh, and Ninth Circuit.
I believe what Petitioner was arguing with regard to whether or not there's finality with that, with the reinstatement order, I believe that was in a 28J letter. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, yeah. I'm just referring to your argument on 1231A5.
Correct.
You know, and whether or not that's helpful to you if there are other pending proceedings, as there are now in California.
Correct. And the argument is, Your Honor, is that as soon as the case is reinstated, as soon as DHS reinstates the case, motions to reopen are barred. And that the question about whether, well, can you file a motion to reopen as long as you have pending withholding only proceedings open, there's no case that I'm aware of that says that that's correct. The only issue that was brought up by Petitioner was had to do with detention under 1226 vice 1231, which is not on point with the issue here because 1231A5 is clear on its face. It says very clearly no reopening after the case is reinstated.
You would agree the Fourth Circuit would say that's inapplicable because there are pending administrative proceedings.
Not with regard to motions to reopen. They chose 1226. That had to do only with the detention issue, whether or not the person who was pending withholding only proceedings was covered under 1226 or 1231 for detention purposes. Had nothing to do with motions to reopen and reinstatement proceedings.
All right.
But I don't believe there's any cases whatsoever that say that once a case is reinstated, their motions to reopen are free game until the withholding only proceedings are over. There's no case that says that. In fact,
let me switch gears here. Is it your position on the 1228B? The statute does use the word may.
Correct, Your Honor.
And does that mean that the decision in this case under 1228B was discretionary?
Whether or not INS chose to pursue FARO proceedings would have been discretionary.
All right. Which is directly contrary to what Ms. Tolchin, the position she takes, right? She says it's not discretionary.
Well,
it is not a discretionary decision. It was a question of law.
I believe whether or not to pursue FARO proceedings would be discretional on the part of the agency. They have to, there's requirements in 1228, they have to pursue removal of somebody convicted of an aggravated felony, but whether or not they do so with the FARO proceeding, I believe, is discretionary because they do say may in that statute.
Right.
I see my time is out. I would just argue that there's no jurisdiction for the court, but even if there is jurisdiction, the court should deny it under 1231A5. Because reopening is prohibited after reinstatement.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Just a few points. First, Your Honors, as to the issue of the reinstatement order in 1231A5, I want to point the court to Luna Garcia, the 2015 decision from this court, which says, the rights, obligations, and legal consequences of the reinstated removal order are not fully determined until the reasonable fear and withholding of removal proceedings are complete. Then Judge Murphy, as to the distinction in the statutes for 1252A2C and then 1225B, 1252A2C restricts jurisdiction and takes it away. 1225B confers jurisdiction. And so there is a difference in the wording there. Then as far as the exhaustion issue for 1252D1, wanted to direct the court to note 5 of Aguilar-Aguilar, which says that 1252D1 does not apply to administrative removal orders because it's not, there is no appeal of right available. And last, as far as the prejudice issues go from 1997, we believe if the removal order is void, no prejudice is required. But I would note, this was a permanent resident with U.S. citizen family who petitioned for him. It was not so clear that this was an aggravated felony. So if he had been placed into removal proceedings before a judge, he certainly could have applied for relief from removal. He now is married to a U.S. citizen, can apply for residency. And so there really is, this is not a distinction without a difference. It really would make an impact on his life. Last, the Heckler versus Cheney exception to jurisdiction. If the court can look at Raymond Prophet versus U.S. Army, I have the site is 343 Fed 3rd 199. It's a Third Circuit case which says if there's a claim that the agency lacked jurisdiction, Heckler versus Cheney does not apply. With that,
is that a case you referred to in your briefing?
I do, Your Honor. Yes. Okay. Great. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. Counsel are excused.